Welcome to All Analytics Radio. This is Jim Connolly. I'm editor of allanalytics.com. Today we're taking measure of the state of analytics. As I'm sure you've found in life, it's interesting to stop every now and then and look back, and you feel a little bit of a surprise when you realize how dramatically things have changed in just a few years. I went through that process last month when I was preparing a blog about the five-year anniversary of All Analytics. I was kind of stunned by how much analytics technology and the adoption process has changed in just those 5 years. In 2011, big data was largely just talk. It was a someday type of thing. Mobile analytics were terribly limited. The IoT, real-time analytics, and autonomous vehicles weren't even on the radar screen for most of us. Think just how far those concepts have come in 5 years, and then think about the opportunities that the coming 5 years present, as well as the challenges to our reaching our goals. My guests today are two people who I feel have an excellent grasp, not only on their own tech specialties, but on the general use of analytics in the business world and the impact that analytics are having on our lives. Regular readers of allanalytics.com know that Tricia Underwood of Zencos is an expert on visualization, and that Pierre Dubois knows his way around marketing and sales analytics. But I think you'll enjoy and learn from their observations about the broader use of data and analytics. Pierre and Tricia, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon. Hello, everyone.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Before we get into the discussion, let me add a note for listeners. We're just overcoming a technical issue on the site. You can enter your comments and questions for the speakers on the live chat board below the audio feed. It may be a little bit slow. I hope not. I think everything's fixed right now. But if it is sluggish for you, I apologize. And you know, we still have our tech team looking into the problems. So, Pierre and Tricia, to start, let's consider what has most impressed you about the analytics journey over the past 5 years. Pierre?
Thanks, Jim. I think if I had to sit down and think about it, I think what's impressed me over the last few years is how less technical in some ways, I say some, there's a little asterisk in there, that analytics has become. When we first started allanalytics.com, my area of expertise was mostly focused on website analytics, helping businesses understand their analytics data relative to a website. But today, if you even look at Google Analytics, just looking at just the traditional web analytics solutions, Google, Adobe, Web Trends, and so forth, they've become much more than just a website measurement tool. They've kind of morphed into an IoT tool. And in the process, they've now found themselves being surrounded by other IoT tools out there and cloud solutions as well. It's really become much more of a business intelligence tool and solution, and that's brought in two major big changes. One is that it's broadened the scope of expertise. You no longer feel that it's just only for the web. It's now tied into more of the business operations, which means now you have analysts and managers who, they may not understand the SQL query off the bat, but those managers are bringing insights and helping to figure out what's the right way to measure. So it's opened up the door in terms of the skill set that's needed, and I think it's opened up in terms of the types of tools and types of opportunities that are out there for not just in terms of analytics in terms of software development and business development.
Isn't that sort of the path that a lot of technologies have followed? I remember when you had to understand DOS to be able to use a PC. Now it's, turn it on and start typing.
There you go.
Tricia, what struck you? As far as outstanding developments?
I remember that the first time I heard data is the new oil, and I think even McCandless said it's the new soil because we can use it to discover more things. And I've seen over the last 5 years that customers have gone from wanting to just count things or average it to, they're really getting more advanced with their analytics and pushing me and my team a lot harder to come up with, what is more value I can get out of this data. You know, they really are starting to understand that as the oil. And I think that's even more true for companies like Google and Amazon, where they're really leveraging a lot of their data and using it to market to their customers. And I see other companies, you know, finally snapping into it and figuring out, hey, that's what we need to be doing also.
So a company like Google, Yahoo, Facebook, whoever, they were built around data. That was data's at their core. But now the companies that you folks deal with, are you getting requests related to data from people who never would have thought of doing that in the past, whether they're executives, or line managers, or just staff employees?
Go ahead, Trisha.
Well, I've been working with a national restaurant chain just in the last year, and it's kind of strange because I don't think they ever thought about this, but they've been looking at how the weather affects how often people come out to eat, and they've been bringing a lot of other different things in. And I don't think this is a company that would have went beyond financial reporting maybe a few years ago or inventory reporting, but now they're trying to figure out how do we get customers into the door? So that's, I think, been surprising.
I'll say from my end, there's some dual trends that are going. I'll say I started off working with smaller businesses, and it was a little bit of a struggle to get those businesses to think beyond just a hit to a website and connecting it to, you know, what the business potential was, at least in the first early years. Now I see more businesses realizing that they have to have it. Part of it is because they realize now that they have to have a site and an app, and a mobile site as well. So there's a lot of – so the discussion is not just in terms of installing analytics, but it's also now more in terms of how do I measure or compare my traffic between an app versus maybe the mobile access to my business versus the website for my business. So there's that part. And then the second, and I see this more with the larger, but I'm also seeing some catch-up with the smaller ones, is in terms of taking that data and tying it into larger systems. One of the neat things I think that we're getting into is that we're starting to see more open-source tools, things like R programming. I was telling Trisha earlier, one of the tools I'm using is a graph database called Neo4j. I'm starting to learn how to use that to tie into a larger to take some of that data and incorporate it and do a little bit of data mining for clients. And I think what we're seeing is this shift from, back in 2011, it was sort of, okay, I've heard of analytics, but what did I do with it? Now we're getting more of this, yes, it's part of our core business, and now we need to spend some time really sorting out how to incorporate that into our operations, our processes, and making it as a way of doing business to serve the customer better.
Now, do you think that this adoption and this drive for innovation, really, is that organizations and executives trying to keep up with the Joneses, or is it being driven perhaps from inside by analytics teams or at least data-aware line managers and executives?
I think it's a little bit of the keeping up with the Joneses to some degree, Oh, go ahead, Trisha.
No, I would agree.
Yeah, I would. I think the part of it is I remember early on, back in 2011, it was sometimes hard to even get some of the larger companies to. They sort of, again, knew that, heard of analytics, could spell analytics, could rhyme analytics, but as far as spending, it was a little difficult. And I think in the last 5 years, we've seen more evidence of businesses beyond retail that have learned how to leverage analytics profitably. So I think now there's more of this pressure of keeping up with the Joneses, which I think that's good from the analytics, from an analyst standpoint, because now you don't feel like you don't have the potential of waiting for a team to get funded for something. I think the downside becomes the sort of struggle for spending and trying to figure out what to spend. you know, one of the notes, and we've talked about this before, about how the spending has increased. The global spend for big data hardware, software, and services was like something like $7.3 billion in 2011, and now we're seven times that, or estimated to be seven times that, $50 billion by 2017. So we see people spending more, which is great, but I think some of that is also this sort of keep up the Joneses. If we don't spend at all, we are lagging behind. Especially, you say you agree too?
Yeah, I think so. People though that are like kind of like what you're saying that are doing it to keep up with the Joneses, they have a harder implementation path because they don't know what they're trying to do. In essence, they, like here's my data, make me profitable, or make me more efficient. And sometimes they don't realize the path that's involved in that. And if your data can't answer the questions you have, maybe you're not collecting it because of your process or your database or, what have you, or if the data is just too dirty and sometimes it takes, like 6 months to get usable data, and that can be a sizable investment for a smaller company. So if they don't know what they want, that keeping up with the Joneses, they're going to flame out real quick.
Well, sometimes also that they're trying to keep up with the Joneses based on what they read in the local newspaper or something about something, some creative application that a competitor has come up with, or even a company that they do business with has come up with a new approach. And you don't even know how the other company did it. We just know that they're getting results. So now you have to find the path.
Right.
Yeah. And there's a lot of paths out there.
I'm going to take you back even more than 5 years, and I'll tell you that 18 years ago, I was absolutely convinced that Pointcast and other push technologies were going to be the way to go in the future. And I think they lasted about maybe a year. think back just 5 years. What did you expect to happen with analytics that hasn't happened?
I was expecting mobile to be a lot more popular than it is, because I was at this one conference or a user meeting, and there was like four or five people there talking about how their execs wanted everything on the iPad and everything had to be ready for that, and what can, how should the data visualizations look, and how should this be, how should that be, and just, I can remember like leaving the conference and going back and doing all this research because I'm like, wow, I really got to be ready for this. And I was telling someone earlier that, I can take, when I'm doing, a demo of a system, I can take my iPad in and, look, it works on the iPad, and it's all I can do to get them to get the iPad in their hand and look at it. They're like, yeah, that's okay, but it's not how we want it. So I'm just kind of surprised by that.
Yeah, I think for me, I'll say a surprise for me has been the rise of JavaScript. And I know that Python is very popular. There's another one called R programming, which I mentioned is popular. JavaScript, I think, and I say this is influential because JavaScript in its first, going, and again, I'm going to do the way back here for everybody. I'm going to go way back to Netscape. was JavaScript was
Oh, that's
born
even
from,
further, that's
the
further back than Pointcast.
Yeah, let's go way back. Let's go way, way back. So it was the original purpose of JavaScript was just for the pop-up window, basically. I always tell clients, think of JavaScript as, the way of going to, get certain things done without calling a server. And what amazes me now is not just that JavaScript is now a main programming language, but that some of that developer expertise has grown over the years. We've seen not only so many frameworks around JavaScript, ranging from the Mean Stack to Angular, Meteor JavaScript, but we've now seen JSON becoming popular as a way of as far as being sort of sparking this interest in how do we deliver data? How do we make it easier for data to come through? I'm seeing now from somebody online here also mentioning about Node.js as well, asking if I'm surprised by it. I'm probably more surprised overall by just the level of ideas that have come up in terms of frameworks. I mean, there was one someone told me about for broccoli JavaScript, which I had never heard of. While I was on OSCON in Austin, Texas, I learned about Cylon JavaScript, which was meant for IoT and robotics. So we're seeing all these different frameworks, but we're also are, and I think one of the challenges is going to be is, you know, and I think this is where everyone, you know, starts to struggle a little bit is, you know, what's the framework that's going to help me in terms of and mapping to internal processes within a business? And we're going to see a lot of spending and hand-wringing, like at least over the next year or two, as people are working through what they're seeing and what's working for them.
Tricia, any other surprises of what's either been missing or what hasn't come to fruition?
It's funny when Pierre's talking about JavaScript. I struggle most with that language, and I was that would have been like one of the last things I would have picked to become popular because it was such a struggle 5 years ago. So that's just kind of, I guess I'm just sitting here in shock that he said that.
See, it's shocking. Don't do it shocking. It's surprising. Surprise.
All right. let's consider our personal lives. How have analytics changed the way you live your life, the way you go about your personal business?
I'm going to answer first, Pierre.
Go ahead.
Because of Amazon and their review system, I find that I have the hardest time going into the online, or into stores and making a purchase, even if it's like a $3 purchase, because I feel like I need to research this on Amazon and overstock, and I need to, I need to review all this on the web before I can make this purchase, which I would not have done, years ago. I would have just, I'm just going to take my chances. And in a way, it's like burdened me. And I've talked to other colleagues who've said they also feel a little bit burdened that they just feel like they have to make the best choice as opposed to just, how about I just get a box of crayons that work? So that's been one thing that's.
Yeah, I have to roll with Trisha on that a little bit. I think it's I'll say for me personally, it's made me a little bit more aware of how to work with clients in terms of having some discussions about privacy. I think that's what's considered an overreach, what is considered potential areas where it's goes beyond the basic metrics to something that might tie together something that might identify some online. I think for me personally, from that standpoint, I know that that's been a personal change. And I think the other personal change for me is I mentioned about JavaScript, and one of the reasons I mentioned about JavaScript is because when I first started with analytics, I had more of a marketing and business skill, and I did learn a lot about HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and about the website structure. And I did that to help businesses, to tie together, how do you add a tag, where should a tag go, and understand what the language that had to go into it. What I didn't expect was, thanks to how JavaScript has grown and with Python and our programming, how much I had to keep learning a little bit more towards the developer slant in how I approach things. And that's made me, I feel like it's made me a little bit more sharper professionally. And it's also helped me, I think, personally in talking with people who, and trying to figure out how to explain things to people and helping them out. We get clients from all over the place, ranging from small to big, and some of the small ones sometimes are nonprofits as well. And you have to learn how to not so much dummy down anything, but keep it pretty straightforward for people to help them make the best choices. And I think that's, that gives you a good feeling, I think, at the end of the day. So I tend to be a little, I think I'm a little happier than at the beginning where I struggled. Feel smarter, not sure. I notice I probably relax a little bit more than anything now, but it took a while to get there.
I think back to your privacy, I was telling Pierre earlier that, like, my 70-year-old mother, she has started identifying companies that she thinks are creepers online, where they're just collecting too much data. They're asking too much information for when she's making a minor purchase. It's like, you don't need to know all this information. And that's kind of my barometer. Like, when my mother is concerned about these things or looking at these things, when she's such a common user of the web, you know, she's retired, so she's not out doing business stuff. So just strange.
Well, Tricia, let me ask about that, you know, going to Amazon to get to know if you should buy a $3 box of crayons or something. Are we overanalyzing in some ways?
I wonder about Amazon, because even if you guys shop at Amazon, you've probably had the experience of where, or at least sometimes I've had to tell people when I've purchased something that I'm not going to leave a review for something that costs like a dollar and a half. Because number one, I don't know what to say. And number two, I'm like, yeah, it was fine, but Amazon won't just let you leave a, yeah, it was fine review. So it does make me wonder, like, they're really driving this behavior. And I've talked about this before on the site is, you know, sometimes this analytics can drive very negative behaviors. And that's an example of one where they're, you know, where the retailer is getting just creepy.
I find it on things like Yelp. You know, if I'm trying to look, should I go to this restaurant? And I see that the average score is 3. Well, 5. You know, half the people gave it a 5, half the people gave it a 1. You know, half of them hated it, half of them loved it. I have no idea who those people are, but it averages out to a 3, so it's probably not too bad, right?
So you want to know, I want more analytics. I'm like, well, I want to know of the people who liked it, what other restaurants did they like, so I know if I like those restaurants, because that's the way I can judge if they're a good judge, if their rating is worth anything.
I think to add to that, I think even just in, you know, beyond the commercial, we're going to probably see a lot of debate and discussion about, you know, how do we correlate what we are seeing as a rating versus what the real sentiment is. I mean, even if you look at, like, for example, even just political, if you look at the Brexit issue that we went through a couple weeks ago, you know, there was a lot of debate about how there was sentiment online that differed from, you know, what ended up going into the vote. And I know, Jim, and we talked, I touched upon this from one of the posts, you know, can Twitter and open source analytics predict the next American president? I think those sort of social issues or impacts, I think, you know, we're going to see some of that influence a little bit in terms of analytics, in terms of, you know, how do we know that we are, how transparent are we in terms of the types of data that's coming in, how it's being assessed, and maybe some questions, you know, how transparent should we be? Trish brought up a very good point. You may not want to necessarily have a remarketing campaign for somebody who's going to spend $1.50 on a product. They may not be quite that extensive. And we'll probably see some things, you know, in terms of social issues where we touch upon it a little bit as things like Twitter become a more of a staple in terms of getting people's sentiment. Because we see that right now going on with social issues that are going on here in the States and abroad.
Just remember, if you see it on Twitter, it has to be real.
Oh, yeah.
but, when I asked the question about are we analyzing too much, let's take that to the corporate level, too. I mean, I've talked to people who basically the straw that sent them into retirement off to a new job was the fact that, you know, they had a new manager who insisted on a cost analysis for a very, very minor project. And it would have taken longer to do the cost analysis than it would have taken to do the project. Are you starting to see that mentality over relying on data in some cases?
I'm not really seeing it.
Go ahead, Tristan.
Yeah, I'm not really seeing that. I most of our customers, I don't know if maybe this is kind of the point you're driving at, is I see them wanting to get down to maybe like to the extra decimal points. They want extreme accuracy, and there's nothing wrong with being accurate, and that is important, but sometimes it's like, well, if five people say this, does it really make a difference if 4.5 said it or 5 said it? Because it's overwhelmingly yes. Or, sometimes I see them like over rotating on the accuracy and just to feel, I guess, better about the data, or if they suspect the data. And again, that's not like, yes, it should be accurate, but sometimes they get a little carried away.
I'll ask Trisha's comment a little bit too. I think some of the concerns with accuracy is that when you start looking at tools to get to that accuracy, you know, a lot of times we have these open source tools that are great, but sometimes they may be answering a specific task that a developer might understand, but it's not going to be something that a business user understands.
Right.
And the importance is having someone from a business user, if they sort of know what they're trying to get to, then they can very good example came up with Neo4j. I'll bring it up real quick. It's a graph database that was used in, it's gotten a lot of notoriety now because it was used for discovering the relationships in the Panama Papers, the whole thing about the offshore accounts. And it took a reporter to establish the relations, to figure out the relationships among the data. So you had a tool, this is an example of a tool that is a querying tool that doesn't necessarily require the same exact spec or accuracy that you might see for a database, but it was just enough for a non-technical user to get some real use from it. That's a great that's probably why those guys have been standing out in among the graph databases. But there's still a lot of frameworks out there, whether you're talking about developer frameworks, some open source tools that may be great and they may solve a particular task or a particular issue, but sometimes those things are so technical that it starts to overlook some of the business concerns, and there needs to be some balance out there. And I think we're going to be struggling with that a little bit over time as well, because there's a lot of great tools, but they may be chasing a lot of ideas that some are not necessarily for the business case or for the business user.
Well, I think just in the past 6 months, we've started to see a lot more of interest in what I'll casually call the citizen data scientist, but it's really not that. It is the ability to take those tools like you described and put them in the hands in perhaps maybe you suggest a type of query to them, or maybe they just are able to go in and poke around. They're not doing the data. They're not cleaning the data or any of that stuff. They're taking the access to the data and something that lets them make a query or to draw relationships. And that seems to really be picking up speed just in the past few months in terms of what people are talking about. Are you seeing the same thing?
Go ahead.
You might want to answer that.
I would say to some degree. I just think there's some. I'm just thinking how I want to word this, basically. I think to some degree. I think a lot of the struggle has been trying to figure out how, you know, just what, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of figuring out what do you need. And I think businesses tend to that's where you get that deer in the headlight look in terms of articulating what do you need and kind of doing it in a way that lets you at least have a feel for that you're marching in a certain direction or a certain or at least is marching in a certain direction or at least allowing you to leverage maybe some tools that you already have. That's another issue, I think. Another thing that comes up is, there's a lot of great open source issues or tools. How do we use that to complement what we have on board? Microsoft right now is learning how to, I think if I remember correctly, think it was Revolution, if I remember correctly. It was an outfit that was specializing in R programming, and they're trying to now see how to integrate some of the R programming features or access to some of their online tools into Azure, if I remember correctly. So you have some, you have solution providers trying to learn what to provide to businesses, and you have businesses trying to learn what to articulate, what their needs are. And again, that will probably, again, people are going to spend, but they're also going to, it's going to be a little bit of a struggle in trying to, make some clear headway. Trish, you have something to add to, or?
No, I'm not seeing, I think it's just because I'm a little bit isolated from some of this, Jim, because I work with so many people who just use data all the time that I don't think of them as citizen data scientists as much. So I don't have an example. I took a class from Coursera last year for geography, and there was a lady there that was collecting information. She was in Baltimore, and she was collecting information about the crime and how crime was impacting different parts of the city. And she was doing this just as a project by herself, and that's why she was taking the Coursera class. And she had a website that showed, like, all these different things that had happened and really horrible things. And so it was just strange that she spent a great deal of her time putting that data together.
I'll say this real quick. I just remembered an example. Actually, I'd totally forgotten about this. Here in Chicago, I'm just outside of Chicago, but in the Chicago area, you have a number of groups that talk about open source data. You had one group that figured out how to put together a database that would check on the quality conditions at the beach. And so it was helping people to, and the name of the site is called Drex Beach, if I remember correctly. But the point of it was that it gave it allowed people to kind of, monitor what the quality of, the beach quality, water quality, to help determine not only if the beach was open for convenience, but also in terms of if there's something in terms of pollution quality. So I remember that. I know there's some other initiatives. I know that I think what's happening is that I'll say this real quick. I think most urban areas, just like corporations, are trying to understand how to leverage data and internalize it. Some cities and some areas are learning how to not only leverage the developers in their community, because some of those developers could lead being startups. That's a great thing. but it also means that the data turns into services for that city, and it becomes almost like a competing advantage for drawing people to it. And I think that's going to become the new way of cities to compete, at least from the larger ones, between like a Chicago, New York, or a San Francisco. But it does raise some good questions on how the smaller urban areas, how do those keep up with the Joneses, so to speak.
Well, it does make
Even the small cities are learning that lesson in terms of, delivering services, delivering information. Maybe not as sophisticated as the visualizations, for instance, you can get it in Chicago or New York. But, the data is there, and they're starting to make it more available. Let me just ask, as we're pretty close to wrapping up here, let me ask you about the areas that you folks have done some writing in. Tricia, obviously, in visualization. Pierre, you've been our eyes and ears on the retail sector, along with other areas. Tricia, what's different in visualization today than you saw, saw 5 years ago?
I think 5 years ago, the most popular data visualization tool was Excel. And I, even myself, because there's a lot of times where Excel could just deliver a nicer looking product than a lot of other tools that were out there. But in the last 5 years, there's plenty of other tools that do a really nice job. Like, even SAS Visual Analytics has just really changed the way SAS has taken an approach to making just something that in the past I don't think was SAS was more concerned about statistics than visualization, and they've kind of turned that around with this tool. And I've just seen, like, really people getting a little bit more concerned about how they are communicating that information and how to say things. And if you recall last fall, when we talked last, I was telling you about how journalism seems like it's just taken this whole new bend on some of this stuff. So that's been very exciting to me.
Right. And Pierre, will Data save the brick and mortar retail store?
I think it will. I really believe it will. I have faith in it. And I think what it will do is force a little bit more. I would say a little bit more strategic planning on how to use that square footage. I mean, I was looking at a site where they talk about like the last, 12 companies that have gone into Chapter 11. A lot of those were retailers that have been in that you would see in a shopping area, basically. I think what's happened is that as retail has seen a number of options for marketing through, let's say, mobile sites, apps, IoT, having beacons, having displays, and social media, people have found more and more channels or opportunities to shop. They do showrooming and web rooming now, and more opportunities to do things not necessarily in the store. So now the problem becomes, how do you balance that? And that's been the challenge for the Best Buys and the definitely for the Macy's of the world. And it's also why Amazon has been not only able to become more than just the largest bookstore, it's also now one of the largest retailers out there. I think the new challenge will be, again, leveraging a balance between online and retail on floor. And I think the other challenge would be with IoT, and I think this is going to be interesting coming from Amazon, is that a lot of what we think is retail, we're used to it being in front of a screen. That may be changing. Alexa, Amazon's been getting a lot of attention with Alexa, and I need to go back and find the source, but there's one that was noting that Amazon is becoming more of a touch point or a starting touch point for querying about products and services. This is a big deal. We're used to going to Google. We're used to going to Bing. We're used to going to a screen and typing in what we want. And these days, we're on a mobile phone speaking into what we want. Amazon will be the first one where if they are making some headway into search, they're going to make some headway into, a mindset of being the go-to place to go to, which means they could be a challenge not only for Google and Bing, but also in terms of a challenge for other marketing tools, whether it's paid ads, paid search ads, and so forth, and trying to figure out how to leverage those a lot more smartly and a little bit more wisely.
Okay. Final question from me. I'm going to ask you to put on your magic see into the future glasses.
Okay.
What are the key opportunities and challenges that you see facing analytics professionals for the next 5 years, or what will we see 5 years from now that is wouldn't expect today?
Okay. Oh, Chris, you want to go first? You want me to?
No, you can go.
Okay. I stuttered a couple of times. Therefore, by law, I have to go. So I would say there's going to be it's sorting out the training a little bit. I think what's going to happen is that we're going to have there's this sort of thing where people have to learn R programming. Some people have to learn Python. To deal with data. Some people need to learn, I mentioned about JavaScript before. But I think there's going to be a little bit of a sorting out professionally in terms of for people who want to learn a little bit just to be dangerous, and then people who know that they have to get a little bit into the weeds to make it valuable. There's a lot of things. TinyM, who's one of the people following online, brought up a good point about data journalism. There's this sort of, blend of, expertise that's going to run the gamut. And I think it's going to become more of a pressure in figuring out what would work, what would fit. I'll say from my end, if you had told me years ago that I would have to be a little bit more better acquainted with developer tools to do my job, I probably would, scratch my head and go, huh. Now I understand it, that that's part of what I'm doing. But I think now what's going to happen professionally is that we're going to see a lot of training, and we're going to be in a real, labor crunch for a while, I think, to some degree. I think we still will, just even despite, you know, all the options that will develop. I think we'll be in a crunch for a while at least, just for another year or two at least, if not, maybe three or four.
Final thoughts?
I agree, Pierre, because I was at the Global Forum, SES Global Forum, and I was talking to this manager from Canada. They worked in a manufacturing industry. And he was telling me that the company had just purchased yet another analytics tool, and they'd had four or five. And that's a common story I hear, because I go into these different customer sites, and I keep hearing this story of, yeah, well, we tried this and we tried that. And I think these people, these managers, keep thinking that tools are going to solve their problems, that somehow magically they're going to plug something in, and it's going to spit out this thing that says, you know, start selling your $3 box of crayons for $3.25. And it's just, it's the people behind it. And this is kind of to Pierre's point, that your people, you have to invest in them. They have to understand a lot about your business. They have to be really good at kind of having some of their own gut feel about the data. So I think that's one thing that's going to have to change, is not every tool's great. And then also I see a lot of managers who are just still, they need to be trained. They need to start thinking about applying data and trusting data and understanding that, someone had said this clout, that someone will have clout in the organization and then they'll feel like they can just trump the data. And that's another thing that organizations, particularly I think smaller ones or maybe more traditional ones, are going to have to overcome.
I think that's a good way to close, because what we have is, you know, people trying to figure out the right balance of when you trust data, what data can do for you, and we're still probing at that. So,
right.
Tricia and Pierre, this has been a great discussion. It's fun, and let's keep the discussion going on the site, over the next week or whatever. I'd love to hear from more people about what has happened in the past 5 years, how things have changed, and how do we prepare for the next 5 years or more. I want to thank Pierre Dubois of Zamana Analytics and Tricia Underwood of Zencos for being with us today. And thanks to all of you for joining us, and to SAS for sponsoring this event. This has been Jim Conley for All Analytics Radio and UBM Tech. Thank you for tuning in. And Tricia and Pierre, one more time, thanks for sharing your experiences.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks for having us, and congratulations to All Analytics for a great 5 years.
Yeah.
Thanks. Have a great day. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.